You are now listening to the eWatchmen podcast with your host, Robert King.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. This is episode number 63 of the Watchman's Post podcast, recorded for the first week of September in the year 2015. If this is your first time to listen to this broadcast, it's a monthly program. I consider questions from listeners, and I try to answer them. At least I give it an honest attempt. Well, we have a few questions for this episode, so let's get to them. This person asks, in your opinion, why is this system still operating? I read your article on 1975, and although it makes sense, it doesn't seem like we will likely see the time of the end start before the end of this year. It is obvious that all human-directed governments are doomed to fail, and there is just so much human suffering in the world. I don't understand what the purpose is in keeping this world operating as it is now. What do you think Jehovah is waiting for? Do you think that perhaps all of the anointed have not been chosen? And also, do you think most of the anointed on the earth know about E-Watchmen and realize at this point that the Watchtower is going to be destroyed? Or do you think it is going to come as a surprise to most of them? Well, that's that question, why hasn't God done something, has been asked for a long, long time. You know, on the one hand, God, you know, is accused of being a bully if he dares to intervene and destroy a wicked world. And then there are those of us that say, well, why doesn't he get it over with? Why does it just keep going on and on and on? Well, the Apostle Peter had something to say on that in the second letter, the third chapter. Remember, he talked about comparing the coming destruction to the flood of Noah's day. And he said, but we should not consider Jehovah's inaction as slowness on his part. In fact, Peter said, consider this as God's patience, as salvation. So that is the only reason why God has not interrupted things so far. Have all the anointed been chosen yet? Apparently not. There are still some to be gathered, called, and chosen. And Jehovah's Witnesses are still busy at their worldwide work. There are a million pioneers at it every day, and millions of Bible studies being conducted. Of course, that could go on and on and on and on and on, but it's not going to. But we have to assume that there are still honest-hearted people that are responding to a message that Jehovah is sponsoring at this point. As for, though, the observation that it doesn't appear as if things are going to wind up in the next few months, I would just point out that we're on the edge of a great war. And in many respects, it has already begun. You know, every war starts differently. You know, it's not like the old days when, you know, an army went marching across the open expanse and you could see them coming from miles away, and maybe they would besiege a city and set up siege works. And it was a lot of work. It took months and months and months to topple a city, say, like Jerusalem. But war isn't conducted that way any longer. You know, back in 1914, Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated in July, the end of that month. And by August, you know, the two blocks of nations lined up and they all declared war on each other. And then, of course, C.T. Russell announced on October 2nd, the Gentile times have ended, their kings have had their day. And what happened next? Well, not much. They didn't go to war immediately, did they? In fact, it was called the phony war. Everybody declared war, and then the shooting didn't start for some time. But of course, it did eventually begin and was the worst war, the most destructive, nonsensical stupidity ever. But every war starts differently. And war now is very, very sophisticated. I mean, it is an entire industry. Really, it appears as if the war has begun, and it's being fought by means of proxy, stealthily. And it was a couple of years ago, the United States, you know, the war planners had targeted a bunch of nations for liquidation. Iraq was the first, obviously. Afghanistan was sort of a staging area. It's close to Russia. This area is vitally important because of the oil and the gas and the rights to control the pipelines through this area. So the United States, you know, they were going to attack Assyria, and Russia and China made it known that that was not acceptable. So then up pops ISIS. And everybody pretty much knows who's looked at this thing that ISIS is a total fabrication. They were trained and funded by the Anglo-American intelligence. And they're being used to further the ends of the London and Washington war planners. But Russia knows this. And that's why even this week, Russia is going along with the game. Okay, ISIS is the enemy, right? Wink, wink, we get it. So we're going to send troops to Syria. Prior to this week, Russia had not really tipped their hand. In fact, it looked like maybe Putin was going to walk away from Assad, but now he's saying he's going to support him for the purpose of destroying ISIS, which is not the intent of the United States at all. Come on, the mighty U.S. military machine can't take care of this ragtag mob riding around on, you know, on these pickup trucks with machine guns. Come on. And then suddenly they wind up with billions of dollars of Humvees and sophisticated military equipment. And we're supposed to believe that the United States is that incompetent, the Iraqis apparently are that incompetent, that they just dropped all of their equipment and ran away. Come on. They had orders to do so. And now ISIS has all this equipment for the intent of toppling Syria because it is on the checklist. So there is definitely a war going on. They haven't called it an official war, but don't fool yourself. So at what point will it become a hot war? Nobody knows the day or the hour, right? But there's another thing to consider as well. In the 11th chapter of Daniel, and that is, of course, the long chronicle of the struggle between the king of the north and the king of the south. And during the time of the end, right? That's the conclusion. During the time of the end, there is this pushing. The king of the south pushes back against the king of the north, and what happens? The king of the north, floods over and dominates all of the nations, including Egypt, which was the original king of the south. So that indicates that the king of the south is finally subjugated by his longtime nemesis, the king of the north. That hasn't happened yet, but are we seeing this pushing? There's certainly evidence of a cyber war and a financial war. Look what is happening in the financial world. The beginning of the year, Russia and China were riding high. The BRICS they have all these developmental projects going, and China is going to back a new bank to rival the IMF and the World Bank, which were two institutions set up after World War II to work in conjunction with the United Nations. And it's a way that the Anglo-American victors would control the Third World primarily by means of loans and all sorts of financial gimmickry and monetary manipulation to prevent Third World nations from rising up. It's a form of colonialism, only much more sophisticated. Well, China announces the Asian Infrastructure and Investment Bank, and they've already been investing heavily in Africa, South America, and actually helping these nations get out of their undeveloped situation. Of course, China's not doing it, you know, out of philanthropy. They're looking out for their own economic interests to help these nations to develop their natural resources to be used by China. But that's just good economics. So as soon as China, this bank, by the way, is going to be up and operating at the end of 2015. Well, look what's happened. China's market tanks, short sellers are involved. Huh? And supposedly that has roiled the whole entire world market. But you really don't know what's going on behind the scenes. But there is something going on. And then you have this mysterious explosion a month ago in a Chinese port city, and then one just a couple of days ago. What's that all about? So, the Anglo-American victors of World War II are not going to give their power away and world dominance away to China or Russia or anyone else. They will destroy the world before they allow anyone to supplant them. And that's where we are right now. I think ultimately, though, the United States is going to be the victim. Sure, it has this super military, but the Republic itself, the institutions within the United States that have protected, supposedly, you know, our constitutional rights, that is going to be the victim of the coming war and financial collapse. So the U.S. military may not be able to be defeated, especially if they go nuclear, but the United States itself, as a as an independent nation and a republic, it is going to be become a thing of the past. And the people that have been behind the scenes of the Anglo-American empire for decades, they're going to come out the victors and set up a new financial system and a new government, probably in the form of the United Nations. And they're going to stay in the driver's seat for a while during that time of the end. And I've mentioned before, it will probably be a global communistic system, totalitarian for sure. And this system, obviously, it cannot go on. The Anglo-American financial system is bankrupt. That's not a big secret. So they can, how much longer can they keep it going before it comes unwound? Just a little while longer, as the Bible says. But we're seeing this destabilization taking place, and it's going to lead up to a huge collapse, an explosion, and when the dust settles, the democratic Republican system of things will no longer exist. And that's not a long way off, my friend. Here's a related question. It says in Revelation chapter 6, it states, "Do not harm the olive oil and the wine." Does this expression provide hope that there will always be provisions during the ride of the apocalypse? Sounds like somebody's concerned about their wine provision, right? Well, my suggestion would be to stock up your wine cellar now, right? No, but Jesus said there would be food shortages, and that's what the opening of this seal of the apocalypse signifies. A quart of wheat, and they say, the black horse and the one seated on it had a pair of scales in his hand, and a voice from the midst of the living creature says, a quart of wheat for a denarius and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the olive oil and the wine. So a denarius was a day's wage back at the time of Jesus. So a day's wage for that day's provision of wheat and barley. So that's not necessarily a food shortage, but perhaps indicative of a deflationary collapse or hyperinflation, as we see in Venezuela now. Their currency is becoming worthless, as it did in Germany after World War I, and people are rioting in some parts of Venezuela, stripping grocery store shelves bare like a horde of locusts. Now, people, are not just going to sit back and allow themselves to be put to death. And really, that unfortunately, I'm into this conspiracy thing, and I've researched it well. And of course, there's a lot of nonsensical stuff and diversionary stuff, but it is an established fact that the British Empire. And by the way, the British Empire is very much in existence today in the form of the financial system, primarily. But anyway, it has been their long-term goal to reduce the world's population. And they've advanced numerous schemes to do this. The Green Scheme is the number one to get the nations to stop using nuclear power, to go back to, 14th century technology. The Dutch invented the windmill back, in the 1400s. So now they're going to, go back to the windmill and water wheels, apparently, solar panels, which are very inefficient, for the purpose of reducing the Earth's ability, the system's ability, to sustain a population of 8 billion. They want to go back to 1 billion. Anyway, they're determined to do that. And apparently, the prophecies confirm that Jehovah is going to allow them to implement their policy on a large scale. That's what the book of Habakkuk signifies. And Jehovah will allow them to reveal their anti-human a disposition, and then he'll destroy them. But I didn't really answer that question, did I? Do not harm the olive oil and the wine. Well, I have to say, we'll see how that plays out. Yeah? All right. I have a little call-in question. By the way, I used to have a toll-free number yet, call on the phone, but technology being what it is now, you can do it right off your computer here. This program called SpeakPipe, and it shows up in my email inbox as a playable MP3 file. So I have a caller here with a couple of questions, and let's listen to them.
Hi, Brother Robert. I just want you to answer me a few little questions. Number one, why does Jehovah don't talk to people anymore? Number two, where did Jehovah come from? But I already know the answer. I just want to hear your explanation. Bye-bye.
Okay. I had to email him and get a clarification on the first question. I couldn't quite make it out. By the way, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this before. It's kind of embarrassing, but I am almost deaf. I should get a hearing aid, but, you know, with a computer, I just turn the volume up or put headphones on. But the older I get, the worse it's getting, and I suspect, you know, when I'm editing these podcasts, I cannot hear it like you hear it. And so if you have any advice for me, like turn down the high gain or the high end or whatever. It's mostly on the high end. I can't hear the higher frequencies. Children's voices are really hard for me, and women, because they speak in a higher register. Anyway, that's one of my little thorns in the side. But she asks, why doesn't Jehovah speak to people anymore? And boy, that's a good question. I think there's a number of ways you could answer this. The Apostle Paul, though, made an interesting comment. In fact, let me open up my online Bible here. Yeah, in fact, the opening words of his letter to the Hebrews, Paul states, long ago, God spoke to our forefathers by means of the prophets on many occasions and in many ways. Now, at the end of these days, he has spoken to us by means of a son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom he made the systems of things. So Jesus is really the last word, you might say. Jehovah spoke to a lot of individuals. You know, it took place over thousands of years. We think of, you know, the Bible times as being a kind of it's all concise little period there, but it really wasn't. It was, well, from Abraham to Jesus was almost 2,000 years. And Jehovah didn't speak to that many people over that period. Maybe 50, I don't know. And that's not really a whole lot, but it was always for the purpose of contributing to the eventual appearance of the Messiah. And then that's all that really needs to be said. We have the words of Jesus now. However, and there's always a however, isn't there? But in the 42nd chapter of Isaiah, which is really God's conversation with his organization at the time that Christ returns. In fact, beginning with the 40th chapter through the end of that book, chapter 66, is basically God's conversation to his people at that time. And here God explains his silence. He admits that he has been quiet for a long time. In verse 14, he says, I have kept quiet for a long time. I remained silent and restrained myself. Like a woman giving birth, I will groan, pant, and gasp all at once. I will devastate mountains and hills and dry up all their vegetation. I will turn rivers into islands and dry up reedy pools of water. And that's where Jehovah goes on to say, listen, you who are deaf, look and see, you who are blind. Who is blind except my servant, so deaf as the messenger I send? Yeah, that's figurative deafness, by the way, not my kind. Just thought I would explain that. So let's be careful what we wish for. Why doesn't God speak to us? Well, when he does, it's going to be terrifying, to say the least. But Jehovah has to get our attention somehow, right? Your other question, which was, where did Jehovah come from? But you already know the answer, but you want to hear me explain it? Is that it? Well, out of the mouth of babes, what can you say? I don't know the answer. I want you to explain it to me, because I think a child could probably understand it better than a grown-up. You know, it's something that absolutely boggles the mind. And it's, I think, terrifying to contemplate. I mean, everything we know has a beginning. Even the universe. I mean, scientists now say it had a beginning. The Big Bang, they call it. That doesn't explain where all the material came from, that supposedly they say it was the matter so dense it was like a spoonful, and then kaboom, and the cosmos is flying out in all directions, even as we speak at this very moment. But where did that teaspoon of matter come from? Anyway, we all have birthdays. Everything had a beginning. The Earth had a beginning. It's maybe 4 billion years old, whatever. And then we come upon this concept that this person, Jehovah, had no beginning. He's always existed. And, I don't sit around and dwell on this, but every now and then I come upon this thought, and an unusual fear comes over me. I don't know if any of you can relate to that. I think it's because you realize that this is unknowable, incomprehensible. We can understand so many things, but Einstein could not understand this. How could God always exist? The human mind has limitations, and I don't even know if the angels can understand it. I was going to say, maybe a child can. I wish you could explain it to me, but I don't like to think about it too often. It just drives me crazy, for one thing. I'm glad he does exist, and we wouldn't be talking about it if he didn't, would we? Well, I think that is going to do it for this episode. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for listening. Until we do this again, hopefully next month, may Jehovah continue to bless your search for the truth.